Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 14 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. 14, episode 14. 14 is my lucky number. It's the day I was born, and it's also the number that David Ginola wore on his shirt when he played for the mighty Tottenham Hotspurs. And so it holds a special place in my heart, the number 14. And I've got a David Ginola gnome in my garden that I pat whenever I'm out there. He's one of my all-time favourite Spurs players. So hurrah for episode 14. Today my guest on the show is Fletcher Delancey, who is a hugely popular and best-selling lesfic science fiction author, and you can hear the fab chat we had coming up very soon. But first, I'm going to do a rundown of the Amazon lesbian fiction charts in the UK and the US. Doing well on both sides of the pond is Melissa Braden, with her third in her Soho Loft series, Ready or Not. This is the conclusion of her hugely popular New York-based series, and it's the story of ad manager Mallory Spencer this time around. Now, Mallory's had to wait for a bit of action through book one and book two, so I'm pleased for her that it's finally coming around, and it's finally Mallory's turn. Well done, Mallory. Good patience there. Also leaping up the charts in the US and the UK is Radcliffe's Prescription for Love, which is sure to be a winner with her legion of fans around the globe. And also Marion Snow's Heart of Glass has punched its way to the top too. She's a new author to me, which is great. I like to see sort of fresh blood in the charts. Also doing well is Mia Archer, not to be confused with Kiki Archer. And her new book is called Second Chances. So that's pretty awesome. But number one in the US and the UK, as I record this, is me. Yes, me. the reason for this, I did a sale on London Calling this month, and it was a runaway success, so I'm really thrilled with that. And it's meant my debut novel has gone to the top in the UK and the US, so that's pretty cool. Also, my festive novel, All I Want for Christmas, is still going well. Top 5 in the UK and still top 20 in the US. So if you have gone out and bought it, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And if you haven't, what have you been doing? I mean, you know, come on, it's a guaranteed Christmas warmer to get your hands around as the day draws near. And I'm really chuffed with the reviews it's getting in the UK and the US. They're very positive. And it would obviously make a fantastic Christmas present for the lesbian romance lover in your life. So don't delay. Order your copy today. So what else have I been doing since we last met on the Lesbian Book Club? Well, after I released All I Want for Christmas at the end of October, I had a little lie down in art room. But then I found I wanted to write a bit more about those characters, Tori and Holly. So I penned an extra bonus chapter. All I Want for Christmas finishes on Christmas Day, so I wrote what happened on Boxing Day. So you can, the bonus chapter is available by signing up to my mailing list, and you can do that at clairelydon.co.uk. Or if you've already done that, tweet me at Claire Lydon or email me mail@clairelydon.co.uk, and I'll send you the link to download the bonus chapter. I've also been busy writing a few short stories, one to give away and the other couple to go on sale. I'm hoping one before Christmas and one just after, so look out for those on my Amazon list and elsewhere. And that's what I've been doing work-wise. Personal-wise, this week my wife and I are going on a short break to Lyon in France, which I'm very excited about, because being very English, I've only ever been to Paris or Calais in France, which is a bit embarrassing, really, isn't it? You know, either go to the capital or where the ferry goes to. But apparently Lyon is the gastronomic capital of France. So we've booked a posh restaurant already, and we've got an apartment, and we are ready to roll. And obviously we booked this before the recent terrible terror attacks in Paris, but I think it's important to carry on and not cancel our plans, otherwise, you know, terror wins. So we are going to France, and I'm sure we're going to have a great time, because I'm a big France fan and love the French people. Also this time around, I'm very excited to say that I have 5 audiobooks of the novel Patience and Sarah to give away. Now, if you haven't heard of this book, you are in for an absolute treat. Honestly, it was a joy to read. It was written in 1969 by Isabel Miller, and it's set a couple of hundred years earlier. And it's the story of two women, Patience and Sarah, and their fight to love each other in a time that, frankly, didn't really allow women to love each other. And it is a terrific book, and honestly, the audiobook is an awesome listen. It's narrated by 2 narrators. It's told from the perspectives of Patience and Sarah. And so you've got the 2 narrators, and they really bring an extra dimension to the audiobook. One of the narrators is Janice Ian, which is very cool. So it's an awesome listen, and if you would like to win a copy of the audiobook, I have 5 to give away. So to win it, tweet me at Claire Lydon or email me mail@clairelydon.co.uk and I will draw 5 winners at random. So throw your hat in the ring, you might win an audiobook. So now it's time for the interview, and joining me on the Lesbian Book Club today is lesbian fiction author Fletcher Delancey, who is an American living in Portugal. Fletcher has so far written 2 books in her Chronicles of Alzia series, The Kefanon and Without a Front, as well as a few short stories and some popular Star Trek fan fiction. She's currently working on book 3, as well as donning her editor hat for her publisher Ilva Publishing. So welcome, Fletcher.
Thank you. And I have to say, my name sounds great when you say it.
Oh, really? How do you say it?
Not nearly so... It's that British accent. What can I say? I'm an American.
Go on then. You say your name for me.
Fletcher Delancey.
Okay. It sounds pretty much as I said it, but you know...
No, it doesn't.
I'll take your word for it. So, how are you today? Are you well?
I'm doing very well, thank you. It's a beautiful day in the Algarve.
As is every day in the Algarve, I'm sure,
well,
right?
Just about. That's one reason why so many of your people moved down here.
Yeah. Yeah, I watch a lot of those, you know... Homes Under the Hammer, you know, Place in the Sun type things. And I think, yeah, maybe I should do that. Maybe I should move to Portugal or France or, you know, somewhere sunnier.
It really is. I mean, I came here from the Western Oregon coastline, and the Oregon coast is a lot like Oregon, excuse me, a lot like London in the weather.
Okay.
So for me, it was a shock to move here. You know, blue skies and sunshine like 280 days a year and dry, and wow, it's just, it's so, so different. And I have become very used to it
now. I can imagine. So with that intro, did that just about cover things? Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No. Let's head into it. Let's
okay.
have a chat.
All right. So, well, paint a picture of me from where you are today for listeners, because I know there'll be a lot of people who have never been to Portugal.
A picture of Portugal? A picture of how I got to Portugal?
No, a picture of where you are. So where are you sitting what can you see?
I am sitting in my office looking out my veranda window, and by window I mean basically French door.
Yeah.
Onto a veranda that has a view of the ocean.
Beautiful.
Yes, and down below me is a calçada courtyard, and calçada is the name, the Portuguese name for those, what you might call cobblestones.
Okay.
But they're not really cobbles, they're little square rocks that are put into various patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And there's orange trees down below me and a veranda full of plants. It's sunshiny and warm. I'm wearing a tank top and flip-flops.
You're making me very jealous sitting here in grey London. Well, that sounds, honestly, that's probably one of the best, paintings of where someone sat since this Lesbian Book Club started. So you win the prize for the best vista. So so tell me a bit about you and your writing journey and how you got started.
Well, I started somewhere, as far as I can remember, about the third grade when I wrote a story about the abominable snowman getting stuck in a chest freezer. Gave it to my parents to read, and then that's sort of been in my blood ever since. I've always loved storytelling.
Yeah.
But when I went to university, I was more interested in science, and so I started out a science degree. Didn't enjoy the hard sciences as much, ended up taking an English degree, but I've always been kind of a hybrid. And so in my career, the niche that I found for myself was that of a marine educator, which means that I utilize my science background to enable science communication, to explain difficult concepts in easy-to-understand language.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually quite a good niche, because people who work in science are not usually the same people who know how to explain science.
Absolutely not, no.
And so that it was my experience in writing for many years, was the drier kind, you know, the writing journals for articles or editing journals. I had a column for a while in a magazine that explained answers to marine biology questions. And I had gotten pretty far away from that fiction love that I had when I was younger, so I thought, well, I want to just try for my own edification to see if I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave myself a goal of writing a 40-page exercise in fiction to see if I could come up with a plot and write decent dialogue, and it got out of hand.
Got out of hand, and
I actually realized recently when I was doing a little back-of-the-envelope calculation that I've written over a million words now between the Chronicles of Alcy and all the past Imperfect series.
Oh, right, really? Gosh, I mean, that is a lot, and that... Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know how many I've written, but it's definitely not a million yet. So well done. So did you stop at those 40 pages at the initial thing, or?
Oh no, those 40 pages were the beginning of Past Imperfect,
okay.
First novel in my Voyager fanfic series.
Right. Okay. So, as you say, you're a science fiction writer with a lesbian twist, which kind of intrigues me, because I'm not a science fiction reader or watcher, but I know from my experience that there aren't many LGBT characters in the more mainstream stuff. I actually used to live with the editor of SFX magazine. I don't know if you've heard of that magazine. It's a science fiction magazine. So I used to share a house with him. So I learned a lot about science fiction during that time. And I was in quite a lot of articles in science fiction magazines, which always, you know, made me laugh. But generally it's because there was free food and booze involved. So, you know, I was there. But you've always been a science fiction fan. You've always read it, watched it.
I am. The interesting thing is that I do love science fiction, but I read more fantasy than science fiction, really.
Okay.
But I think the first science fiction story that ever caught me was actually the TV show. It was Buck Rogers in the 24th Century, because Wilma Darling was hot.
It's a good reason.
But I read the Space Odyssey trilogy, and I read Wrinkle in Time, and I loved those kinds of stories. But the fantasies that were really got me.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in reading, I'm more toward fantasy and speculative fiction, and in TV, I'm more into the science fiction. But what really nailed me was the Star Trek series, particularly Next Generation and Voyager, because they showed a vision of humanity that I did not see in the world around me.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually were a fantasy, really, of humanity becoming better than it is, and I found that so very attractive.
Yeah, I was going to say there's quite a lot of crossover, I would think, between science fiction and fantasy.
There totally is. Yeah. That's why they've been lumped together all the time.
Yeah. And as you said, so you started off writing fan fiction for Star Trek, did you get quite a following doing that?
At first I did not, because I didn't write Janeway 7 or any established pairing in the Voyager fanfic, and so that meant that I was rarely linked to or put on any aggregation sites, because everyone wanted their pairings that they wanted to see. They didn't want to see an original character.
Right.
But, you know, when people find good quality writing, they tell their friends. And so I acquired a following by word of mouth, and it's hard to quantify how many readers I ended up with, but I got a lot of letters from women who were very lonely or scared because they felt that they were the only people who thought like they did, and they said that my stories gave them an escape or a hope that things could be better and a bright light to hold on to, and that is why I wrote for those letters, for the blue belief that I could make a difference in someone's life, that someone could turn on a computer and read a story, and for a while go someplace that was safer and where there was hope.
And so you said that when you were writing this, the fan fiction changed your life because you started writing about lesbian relationships in your books, even though at the time you were married to a man. But the clues were there, and you eventually stepped away from that marriage, met a woman and fell in love. And so can you talk a little bit about how your writing pulled back the curtain on who you actually were?
Well, I said that that my stories have given other women some hope, and the truth is that I wrote them because they gave me hope.
Yeah.
That's actually why I began writing. I wasn't happy in my marriage. I was content, but I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
And my writing was me envisioning a kind of love that I didn't have, but I wanted to believe I could have, or maybe someday in some other life. And it wasn't really about the idea of having sex with other women. It wasn't about the eroticism. It was about the emotional connection, which I had never had in any of my prior relationships, or I should say my prior sexual relationships, or my husband, but I had had those emotional connections with women, and I had to believe that somehow there was a way to combine the deep emotional connections I had with my female friends along with the sexual connection that I had with lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I was after. But I didn't know it was possible. You know, and even my heterosexual friends who are all married, they all said the same thing, that they didn't have that with their boyfriends or husbands. And so I thought, wow, maybe it really is just a total fantasy. Maybe it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
To anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was emotionally lonely, and it is true that you can be more alone while sharing a house with a person than you can be in a house by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote those stories to escape that, and I put it on my own website as a little sign in the wilderness that said, "Is anybody out there?" And they were, and they began writing me. And then one woman in particular wrote me, and she was a woman from Portugal, who said, "I love your stories, and here is why." And she was very articulate, and so I wrote back, and we ended up in a pen pal relationship. And I thought, well, you know, this woman is safe. She's just 5,000 miles away. I'll never see her. And that gave me the sense of anonymity and safety that I needed to tell these secrets that I've been carrying for quite some time, and these huge self-doubts and these thoughts that maybe I'd made a big mistake marrying this man, and how the hell would I ever get out of it, and was there any point, because was there anything better to go to?
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that she had just been through that exact same journey. She had also been married to a man whom she had recently divorced, although she had a child out of that to mix things up. And she was at that time exploring her own sexuality, and so not only did she completely understand, but she was also kind of a mentor for me on my own journey, and I felt so totally safe telling her everything, and it was such a relief to be able to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
So we built a friendship on raw, brutal honesty, and that's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, very much so. And
so it grew from that.
Mm-hmm. And then you did eventually, move over to Portugal to be with this woman who you eventually fell in love with. And that must have been a very sort of really challenging but exciting part of your life. And did you keep writing this whole time while you were having, sort of exchanging letters and stuff?
Yes, absolutely. I think, Maria wrote me when I was in the middle of Future Tension, I think.
Right, was that like...
Third book in the series. Sorry, I had to make my brain stop for a moment there.
That's right.
Because I kept writing while I was with her, or while I was communicating with her. And
yeah.
Then when I divorced my husband, I spent 1 year in Oregon just sort of finding myself again before I made this big jump to Portugal. And that was the year that I left Voyager fanfic world and wrote Without a Front, the initial version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted something different, something of my own. And then when I moved here, wow, what a whole different world. It was a very, very difficult adjustment to leave a place where I not only was fluent in the language, but made my living out of my command of that language, to
mm-hmm.
come to a place where I had no command of the language at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a huge shock, and it's so culturally different. And the environment is different. the ecosystem is different, and my other strength is in science and biology, and I didn't know any of the biology here, so I was truly out of my world in every way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, the irony did not escape me that I made the same decision that one of my main characters in the past Imperfect series did. I wrote about Lynn Hamilton giving up everything she knew for love and moving to a whole new universe, and I did the exact same thing years later.
Really? Oh, that's incredible, isn't it? It's a really, really incredible story. And that you did actually move to a completely new universe. Yeah.
I did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, amazing. And so I guess that those books probably, do you map out your lives, like, you know, where were we when I wrote that book? And where are we now when I write this one?
we do it a bit, you know, and although they just tend to blend together after this much time, after so many stories, but I can still remember, you know, exactly where I was and what I was doing when I wrote certain passages. You know, there's always some passages that really stand out, connecting your memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and probably sort of document how you were feeling then and how you were in your life. But now you are all settled in Portugal and life is good, and you've got 280 days of sunshine every year. So you know, what could be better? So tell me a little bit about your most recent series then, the Chronicles of Alzir. You released the first book, The Cefnon, earlier this year, and book two just came out recently.
Okay, well, The Cefnon, or Cefnon, however you want to pronounce it, it's classic science fiction. It's first contact, cultural clashes, and big battle scenes. It starts out with a giant ship crashing onto a planet whose inhabitants thought they were alone in the universe and got quite a rude shock. Come to find out that not only are they not alone, but their planet is a prize in a struggle between two powerful galactic forces. There are three main characters: the human starship captain, who sacrifices her ship to save the planet, and her partner, who is the archaeologist who was studying that planet, and then there is the Lancer of Alsi, the planetary leader, who has to deal with this sudden appearance of aliens and the possible destruction of her entire civilization if she doesn't play her cards just right. So the story is about these three women who all become friends but end up on different sides of the conflict. So it's about making hard choices when the stakes cannot be higher, about mm-hmm. choosing between duty and what is morally right, and about betraying one person to save many.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes it different from a lot of mainstream sci-fi is that there is a love story embedded in the plot, and it's crucial to that plot. It's not the main focus, but it is crucial to that plot.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go on.
All right, well, that love story, or a branch of it, continues into the second book, which is Without a Front, The Producer's Challenge, which is about the aftermath of the events in the Cefnon, the battle damage, the introduction of new advanced technology into a culture, and the collective PTSD that comes when a huge part of the population has to go against bedrock cultural morals to save their world. But what it's really about is the personal journey of Lance Hertal, who was purely a warrior and a politician in the Cefnon, but is realizing in Without a Front that she's also a woman who needs more in her life. So in this book, the romance is front and center. Lance Hertal is overworked and strung out and trying to heal, and the disastrous affair doesn't help much. She's also trying to get the six castes of Alsi to accept the introduction of new technology, and one of those castes, the producers, who are farmers essentially, they're terrified of this new technology because they fear it will destroy their caste.
Mm-hmm.
So while Tala's trying to convince them, she meets Salomon, a producer, who challenges her to come and work on her farm for the equivalent of an Alcyon month, to see for herself how the producers work and why that new tech will be so harmful. Tala thinks this is her best chance of winning over the producer caste, so she agrees, and is on this farm while living with Salomon's family and learning about a life she never knew anything about, that she really begins to heal and find herself, along with the kind of love that she never thought she'd have. So it's a slower book than the Cefnon. It focuses more on world building and political intrigue and family and romance. And some readers will like it more than the Cefnon for that reason, and some will like it less.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And book three is coming out soon as well, is it?
In about 2 weeks.
Two weeks. Okay. And that's a continuation of this story again, is that?
It is. Yeah. And actually, Without a Front is really two books. I mean, it's one story split into two books. We have The Producer's Challenge, which is the month that Lance Hertal spends on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one is The Warrior's Challenge, which is when Salomon comes back into the state capital, the world capital, to fulfill her part of the challenge. And in this book, Lana Sertal is facing internal dangers that she wasn't even aware of in the previous book, because she was falling in love and not paying close enough attention to her professional life, which means that by the time she understands what's happening, she is already losing the game and needs to find some very creative ways of turning things around. So this one is more action-oriented, where all the setup in the producer's challenge pays off.
Okay.
The romance is still front and center, and it has to be, because that romance is what enables the solutions that Lana Sertal finds. But this is the book where we see just how ruthless Tal can be and how far she'll go to do what she thinks is right.
Okay. I am partway through Without a Front, which I'm enjoying. It's very different to anything I've ever read before, but I'm really enjoying it. And one of the things that really stood out straight away was all the different names and all the different language that you create. How do you come up with all that sort of thing? Because, you know, I think a key thing for a lot of writers, they struggle with character names.
Yes. You know, there's a program in Scrivener, which is my writing application, a little sub-program that comes up with names. It's called the Name Generator.
Oh, is there really? I didn't know that.
There is. It's fabulous. And I wish I could use it, but since I'm dealing with alien worlds, I can't come up with human names, you know?
No.
So it's like, oh, damn. Why isn't there an alien name generator?
Yeah.
I need one of those. But yeah, the language is actually fairly easy for me to come up with. The names are much more difficult.
Okay. And you said as well that you love strong, sassy women in your writing with a healthy dollop of humour. Tell me a bit about the importance of those two things in your writing and in your life generally.
Well, in my life generally, I have very little patience for people who cannot find humour in even crappy situations. And I love people who can make me laugh. I mean, Maria and I laugh with each other every single day. And I never had that in my marriage or any prior relationship. I think it is just absolutely precious, and it is the bedrock that we've built our relationship on. I think it's laughter and it's honesty are the two most important things in someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
And as for strong and sassy women, how can anyone not find them as attractive as hell?
Good answer. I'm with you on that one. So your day job now, I mean, are you full-time writing and editing now, or are you doing other things as well?
I am full-time writing and editing, and I'm also a Pilates instructor. So I teach classes twice a week, which gives me a nice little bit of pin money to add to the household accounts, and also keeps me very fit and has really been the means by which I integrated into this new culture by finding a new social circle.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So do you know all the Pilates, Portuguese words, Pilates moves and stuff like that?
Surprisingly not. I thought that I would be learning to teach in Portuguese, but I've ended up teaching expats.
Okay, right. that's
most
what you...
of them are British, by the way.
Yeah. I don't know what they see in that 280 days of sunshine. You know,
I know.
What I mean? and like you say, you're editing a bit now as well for your publisher Ilva. So how does that balance out, the balance of writing and editing? Is it about 50-50 or?
Oh no, not at all. I do much more writing right now than I do editing. Although I know that Ilva would be happy to utilize my editing skills as often as I could offer them, but it's impossible for me to do them simultaneously. I know that there are others who can do that, and my hat is off to them, but I cannot divide my brain that way, so I have to finish my story first before I can bury myself in someone else's, or I won't be able to do justice to either one. So this year has really been about writing, and I think next year I will be doing a bit more editing.
Because you've got a lot of books out this year, so well done. And do you write when you're in your writing sort of phase? Do you write every day? Do you have a certain time of day that you write better?
I do. I write better in the afternoon and at night. Mornings are time to get up and have a nice pot of tea and relax with the cat and take care of email and just sort of ease into things. And then I often segue from there into writing. And I tend to write best late at night because that's when things get quiet around here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I live in a we call it the Urbanita Sal here. It's a condominium complex built around a courtyard, and there's a cafe on the first floor, which is very normal in Portuguese towns. First floors are always shops and cafes and whatnot, and it's open until 11 o'clock to midnight every day except Sunday. And it has tables outside, and people come out there and drink their beer and have their goat cheese, and kids run around and play while they're there. And it's in the summertime, it is incredibly noisy, and nobody can think for themselves until the cafe closes at midnight. So I have done some of my best writing in the summertime between midnight and 3 a.m.
Okay, right. That's quite unusual, because I think a lot of people do early mornings, don't they? They're like, get up straight away. But I know Russell T. Davis, who writes Doctor Who and quite a few other things. He always says he does his best work sort of late at night, because he has no interruptions.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah. I understand that totally.
Yeah. I'm similar when I can't sleep. I quite often get up and then write, because there's no point just, you know, tossing and turning. Get up and do something useful.
Yeah. My mom does that too. She has amnesia. Insomnia. Not yet. Yeah. No, she used to do that, toss and turn and try to sleep. And finally she said, the hell with this, and just gave up. But now she does. Gets up, turns the computer on, and starts writing.
Oh, okay. Your mum's a writer too, is she?
She does more genealogy work. So for her, it's more correspondence. But it's also the creative process of putting puzzles together.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Working your brain.
Yeah. So you've described Portugal quite a lot to us so far. So, what do you miss about the USA, and do you get back there much?
I don't get back nearly often enough because it's too far away. It's so expensive to go back there. I mean, it would be much easier if I came from New York City or anywhere on the East Coast where I could just have a quick little, well, relatively quick little 5-hour flight. But it's a 9-hour nonstop from London to Oregon. And then, of course, I have to get to London from here. So generally, it takes a full day of travel. And so I've been here 8 years now, and I've only managed to go back 4 times, which is not nearly as often as I would like. In fact, I'm actually quite envious of the people I teach here, my expat students in Pilates, because they're always running off to England or Scotland for the weekend to go visit family.
Yeah.
Like, I wish there were transporters, and I could just step into one and go, zing!
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize that you'd have to come to London first. So yeah, that's quite a huge journey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but as you say, you're very happy in Portugal. So I'm assuming you've developed a taste for, you know, salted cod, octopus salad, custard tarts, all of that.
I'm very impressed with your knowledge of the Portuguese cuisine.
You know, I have a Portuguese friend, so he cooks me a lot of salted cod and octopus salad and stuff. So,
and do you like it?
I do. I love it. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good. I find salted cod way too salty. The Portuguese, they love their salt.
Yeah.
I find it overwhelming. But there is one particular dish, bacalhau brau, bacalhau brach, which is a way of treating salted cod that I just adore. Otherwise, I love the food here because it is so fresh. I don't think I ever had fresh, really fresh vegetables except at the farmer's market. When I was living in the United States, you don't find them in the grocery stores. But here, everything is locally grown and so fresh. And you get your meats from the butcher, and it's locally sourced. And the flavors are fantastic. And the Portuguese are amazing bakers. I have fallen in love with the cheese and the pastries and the breads and all put together. And, you know, it's not easy to maintain your weight in Portugal. Hence the Pilates classes.
Yeah, yeah. You're doing good with those. Yeah, we're just going on holiday to France next week for a week, and we enter Lyon, which is the gastronomic capital of France, apparently. So I was thinking, God, I better get down the gym today and you know, work off some calories pre-going. Yeah. You know,
work it off in advance.
Exactly. I know what's coming. And what do you think of the explosion in lesbian fiction writing over the past few years? Are you an avid reader of lesfic?
You know, here's a surprising thing. I actually don't read that many books because when I'm writing, I can't really spare the brain cells to sink into someone else's story. So I need really simple reading. So I read a lot of fanfic.
Okay.
Because it's short and it's easy to get into. You can finish a story in one evening and then close the thing and go to bed and go to sleep. And I've actually found quite a few excellent authors in fanfic and turned a few of them into Ilva, to be honest. And I do love finding a good, high-quality lesbian author, in which case I will dive in.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm definitely an avid reader, but I don't read as much as I would like of the more challenging stories, the more complex and layered stories that the really good authors write.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I did. Maybe I will next year when I'm doing more editing than writing.
Yeah, yeah, maybe you will. Yeah, absolutely. And is there a tool or app you'd recommend to somebody if they're writing at the moment to improve their writer's journey?
Scrivener, totally. You have to use Scrivener. Do you use this?
I do, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Well, it's available on, as you know, it's on all platforms. You can use it Windows or Mac.
Yeah.
And it is such a great way of keeping everything in one place. I mean, I wrote my first 4 novels on Word, and then I got Scrivener, and I never looked back. I can't imagine going back to Word to write a story now, because I love being able to break everything up into scenes and chapters and being able to go to a scene immediately when I want to check on something or change something or fix something, and being able to reorder scenes by just dragging them around. It's just because I'm sort of a pantser, you know, I create a lot of my plot as I go, which mm-hmm. means I need the flexibility of rearranging things, and Scrivener gives me that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I wrote my first 2 novels in Word, and now going back, I really need to get them into Scrivener, but it's just a bit daunting. So.
I know what you mean, because I had to do that with my first 4 novels too, and I think I spent days importing those and breaking up the chapters. Yeah, it's not easy, but when you're done with it, you're done, and it's so worth it.
Yeah, no, I will absolutely do that, because I'm just having to upload the first one again, and oh god, it's a pain in the ass. But as you say, your next book is out in 2 weeks. What's that called?
It's Without a Front, the Warriors Challenge. So we had the Producers Challenge last right. month and the Warriors Challenge this month.
Okay, and is there anything else in the pipeline coming up, or will you be shifting into your editor's hat after that?
Well, I am shifting the editor's hat, but there is also something in the pipeline, a couple things actually. I have a novella called Velmar the Blade, which is still part of the Chronicles of Alcy series, and I'm going to be rewriting that, putting that out next year. And because I've been doing so much work in the Chronicles this year, and thinking about it so much, my feverish little brain has been working hard, and I've actually got most of the plot lines of 2 more books mapped out so far. So the next book is going to be focusing on the adventures of Captain Sperato and her partner Lynn, who were featured heavily in the Cathinnan, but then vanished mostly from Without a Front because they're no longer in the area. So the next book will be about their adventures and what happens to them after the Cathinnan.
Okay, cool. And that's going to be sort of 2016, is it?
With Velmar the Blade will definitely be 2016. The next book, I'm not sure. Don't know if I can pull it off that soon, but I will try.
Okay. And final question, if you could be the love child of any 2 writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
I would choose Jane Austen and Barbara Kingsolver.
Okay.
Jane Austen, because she was very witty and a master of detail, and she's so good at describing emotions in just a few words.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And Barbara Kingsolver, because she's half a poet, and she comes up with the most beautiful descriptions that I have ever read. She has ways of putting words together that I can only aspire to, and they're like jewels sparkling on the page. And she's a huge writing role model, so I would love to have those genes.
Cool. Excellent. Awesome. Great answer. And where can people find out more about you, Fletcher?
Well, you can find about me on I have 2 blogs. I have my non-writing blog, which is called Oregon Expat, which is more about my adventures here in Portugal. And then I have my writing blog, which is on my Chronicles of Alcy website. So it's just chroniclesofalcy.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find my books on Amazon, of course, and also Ilva Publishing. So I'm also on Twitter and Facebook, and I think that covers it.
Yep. you're out there. You're in the ether. Well done.
I'm out there. The only thing I don't do is Tumblr.
Okay. Yeah, no, I haven't mastered that one yet either, so yeah. Okay, well, great. Well, this has been a really, really great chat, so thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
No, it's been awesome, so thank you again.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club, so this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, All I Want for Christmas, London Calling, This London Love, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, or any other of the key digital outlets. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon, and I love a new follower, so come on down and follow me there. And remember, if you want to win a copy of the audiobook of Patient and Sarah, which is well worth winning, tweet me at Claire Lydon or email me to win, and I'll put the email address in the show notes. Thanks to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And make sure you tune in to the Lesbian Lounge with Denise for all the latest LGBT news, views, interviews and gossip. Join me next time for more hot book club action. See you then.